The murderers on death row today should be executed. Excuse me, what did he just say? My name's Doug McBurney, and I heard Bob Enyart say just that in 1995, and I've been listening ever since. I found out that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel, and that Christianity and justice need not be mutually exclusive. A video titled God and the Death Penalty is available today at kgov.com. God and the Death Penalty examines God's ideas about justice. You'll learn the New Testament verses affirming the death penalty and understand why God never repealed capital punishment. Find out God's opinion. Order God and the Death Penalty today at kgov.com. That's God and the Death Penalty at kgov.com.
Warning, there's truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
And greetings to the brightest audience in all of America. I am Greg Jackson, once again, filling in for my good friend Bob Enyart here at BEL. The website is kgov.com, kgov.com. If you were with us last week, you heard my interview with the president of the Michigan AFA, the American Family Association in Michigan. For the past 12 years, the gentleman's name is Gary Glenn. We were talking about, essentially, where the pro-family kind of Christian right movement in America went wrong over the past couple of decades. It was Jim Dobson who said that our nation is awash in evil and that the pro-family movement has lost every major battle it's been involved in. And I invited Gary on initially to discuss what are the reasons, first of all, to give us some examples and also to discuss why have we lost the major battle on just about every issue across the board, from abortion to homosexuality, so on and so forth. I felt that it was important because we just kind of got into it last week to bring Gary back to the program. And Gary, I appreciate you coming back to Bob Enyart Live.
Greg, happy to do it.
For those that weren't with us last week, you and I talked a little bit about, and we're going to have to repeat some of those stories. We have a large Christian audience here in the Rocky Mountains that listen to Bob Enyart, and across the country, by the way. I don't think that a lot of grassroots people are aware of what kind of goes on behind the scenes in regards to the pro-family leadership and a lot of these organizations like American Family Association, Focus on the Family, Family Research Council. Gary, you've been involved 30 years in this. You've been in politics. You've been elected official in the GOP. You have run for Congress in Idaho. You have been involved in American Family Association Michigan for the past 12 years. You were on the forefront of trying to warn as many people as possible about Mitt Romney, which you and I both know, and many of the people in this audience have heard this from Bob, was the most far radically left-wing candidate across the board on the social and economic issues, and yet the vast majority of the pro-family leaders in America in 2008 either endorsed him or whitewashed his record. They didn't say anything about it. We talked a little bit last week, but I think this would be a good jumping off point. In your estimation, from inside the pro-family movement there at American Family Association, how did so many people, from Dobson, who said, you know, essentially Romney was a man who pro-family voters could vote for, that Tony Perkins, the president of Family Research Council, said that he was, what, across the board, the most conservative?
Solidly conservative across the board.
Solidly conservative across the board. He also said that he was a friend to the pro-family movement. Now, how is it that so many people could support a man that arguably did more to advance the culture of death and abortion and the homosexual agenda than even Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton could have done?
Well, Mitt Romney has been a friend of the pro-family movement in regards to his checkbook. And, of course, his family used to donate to Planned Parenthood when he was running for office in Massachusetts. But when he decided he needed to be a conservative to run for president of the United States, he and his underlings got out their checkbooks, wrote checks to various pro-family groups, some of which used to be critical of him, suddenly were saying what a great pro-family, pro-life champion he was. I don't want to be all that repetitive of what Bob talks about, but I do want to make sure that I'm faithful to the truth and laying the groundwork for a lot of our discussion. I mean, Mitt Romney in 1994, as a candidate for the United States Senate against Ted Kennedy, said that he'd be more effective at promoting the gay rights agenda than Ted Kennedy would. And he was right about this because his point was that if a Republican is endorsing and promoting the gay rights agenda, that will do more toward undercutting pro-family groups' opposition to it than some liberal Democrat pushing the homosexual agenda. So he was absolutely right. Had he been elected and kept all of his promises, he had endorsed Barney Frank and Ted Kennedy's federal gay rights legislation, which establishes special protected class status on the basis of homosexual behavior and cross-dressing, single biggest threat to religious freedom in America today, whether it's the Boy Scouts or Catholic Charities or Catholic Charities being told it must process adoptions of children to homosexual couples, or the church in Maryland that was stripped of its tax-exempt status because it wouldn't allow a lesbian couple to use its beachside chapel for a wedding, or the photographer in New Mexico fined $6,500 because she would not photograph a homosexual wedding. Mitt Romney promised to sponsor that legislation if elected. He endorsed taxpayer-financed same-sex benefits for the homosexual partners of government employees. He opposed the Marriage Protection Amendment to the state constitution that was proposed by pro-family groups before the state Supreme Court issued its illegitimate ruling regarding homosexual marriage. He's responsible for having issued the executive orders that actually implemented so-called homosexual marriage, the practice of it, in Massachusetts when he was under no court order to do so, when the legislature had not changed one sentence in the state law that I believe still to this day defines marriage as only between a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
It was the governor, Mitt Romney, who issued the executive order ordering magistrates and justices of the peace to perform homosexual marriage ceremonies or resign. It was Mitt Romney who issued the executive order that state marriage licenses be amended to no longer say husband and wife and instead say partner A and partner B. And the governor of Massachusetts is also allowed to himself issue formal marriage licenses. It's just something he gets to do for his friends and supporters and such. And Mitt Romney personally issued marriage licenses for homosexual couples.
Without an enabling binding statute, correct?
To this day, there's no binding.
Yeah, the law has not changed. And even the court admitted that for gay marriage to become, quote unquote, legal, that it would have to be the result of the legislature actually amending the marriage statute, which is Chapter 207, I believe.
All he had to do, Greg, was do what the Massachusetts legislature did. Nothing. Ignore the court.
So even the far left-wing mass legislature was more conservative than Mitt Romney.
Exactly. He promised if he was elected to the Senate, he said when he was running for Senate that he thought that openly homosexual men should be able to participate as scoutmasters in the Boy Scouts of America. He endorsed gays in the military. Just about every element of homosexual activist's political agenda as a candidate for the U.S. Senate or as a candidate for governor, he endorsed. He was twice endorsed by the homosexual log cabin Republicans. I mean, that's on the homosexual issue. You know, even after his flip-flops, his current position, his last stated public position, is that he still supports states enacting the so-called sexual orientation laws, that he still opposes the Boy Scouts' universal 50-state ban on openly homosexual scoutmasters in every council in America. He's opposed to that. On the abortion issue, he said as a candidate for U.S. Senate in 1994 that Roe v. Wade was established law, that we ought to sustain it and honor it. He said, I will not change my position on that because my own mother was a champion for women's freedom to choose when she ran for the Senate in Michigan back in the 70s. So he said, my family has long believed in the principle that a woman and her doctor ought to be able to make this choice about terminating the life of her prenatal child, and I will not waver, will not change on that. His wife was a donor to Planned Parenthood. Mitt himself appeared at a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood back in the 90s. He was a registered independent. He voted for Paul Tsongas, the Democrat, for president in 1992. And he said, as the candidate, that he disavowed the Reagan administration. He says, I was a registered independent. I don't want to take us back to the policies of Reagan-Bush. He criticized Senator Jesse Helms and others he portrayed as extremists in the Republican Party. And on the issue of abortion as a candidate for governor in 2002, he was indignant, said in the televised debate, "I do not take the position of a pro-life candidate," and promised that he would support Massachusetts abortion laws. Even after, at age 58, he had this supposed change of heart and, you know, road to Des Moines experience where he suddenly became a pro-family, pro-life champion. Even after he claims that happened, he took the position of requiring Catholic hospitals in the state of Massachusetts to issue the morning after pill, and he signed into law with Ted Kennedy and Hillary Clinton's endorsement, RomneyCare, which the Obama administration says was the model for Obamacare, which had the individual mandate forcing citizens to buy insurance, but also had a $50 copay for abortion on demand, meaning the bulk of the payment of that abortion to terminate the life of a prenatal child was paid for by the taxpayers of Massachusetts, and gave a designated seat on the board of the health care governing plan to Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider. He served, I think now, three times on the board of the Marriott Corporation, which distributes hundreds of millions of dollars in pornographic in-room movies. And even the Deseret News, Greg, in Salt Lake City, owned by Mitt Romney's own church, published an editorial criticizing Romney for having personally profited from the sale of pornography, not only while serving as a member of the board of Marriott, where he could have spoken out against it if he had wished, but also because he's a Marriott stockholder, for years having personally profited from the sale of pornography, even though if you go to the website of his own church, it says that the church is opposed to the manufacturing, the creation, the distribution, the sale of pornography. So across the board on pro-family issue after issue, here was a guy who personally profited from the sale of pornography, which is one of the main factors in sex crimes against women and children, one of the main factors in breaking up families, who aggressively promoted the homosexual agenda, was endorsed by homosexual activists in return, who indignantly insisted that he was not pro-life until he decided to run for president. So this is the man we're talking about, and yet Dr. Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Convention, to whom millions of Southern Baptists look for leadership, said that Mitt Romney could be an excellent candidate for president or for vice president after John McCain was actually nominated back in 2008. Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council said on the internet in a video that Mitt Romney's positions were solidly conservative across the board. You had even James Dobson say that he couldn't endorse Mike Huckabee until Mitt Romney had left the campaign trail because they were two equally pro-family candidates. Mike Huckabee championed the Marriage Protection Amendment to the Arkansas Constitution, was one of the most pro-life governors in America, and James Dobson equated his record with Mitt Romney's in terms of them being equally pro-family. It simply was not an accurate representation of the record of Mitt Romney, and here we find ourselves now in 2012 with Mike Huckabee saying he's not going to run, various others who are not going to run, and Mitt Romney is now far and away the front runner. And so once again, we find ourselves front and center confronting the possibility that the Republican Party might nominate a candidate for president with a record of signing taxpayer-funded abortions into law, an individual health care mandate, promoting the homosexual agenda. You know, Mitt Romney, if he's president, will be the honorary chairman of the Boy Scouts of America. You think the homosexual activist groups won't go back and pull up the video where Romney says, "I believe people should be able to participate in scouting no matter what their sexual orientation." You think the homosexual activists will use the fact that the honorary chairman of the Boy Scouts of America doesn't support their policy protecting 12- and 13-year-old boys from exposure to men openly involved in the homosexual agenda? We find ourselves again facing the prospect that it will be the Republican Conservative Party that'll nominate a man who thinks states should pass gay rights laws that pose the greatest single threat to religious freedom in America today. Now, some of us, having come through that process of 2008 and seen people that millions of Christians look to for leadership whitewash and misrepresent the nature of his record, we're committed not to remaining silent if that happens again. In 2012, we're committed to the truth to tell the truth to those who look to us for leadership, who trust our counsel and our judgment, tell the truth about these candidates, and if any one of us doesn't tell the truth about these candidates, to tell that same constituency who it is that's not telling them the truth about these candidates.
By the way, we're speaking with Gary Glenn, president of the American Family Association Michigan. Gary, I guess what I would say is, first of all, has Mitt Romney stopped running for president? I think a guy's been running for president for before he ran for governor of Massachusetts. But the fact of the matter is that all these people endorsed him with their public statements, as you just said, Tony Perkins, Richard Land, Focus on the Family, both Tom Minery and James Dobson. I mean, those statements are already out there. They've never been retracted. So shouldn't these leaders of these pro-family organizations that purportedly are advancing the causes and concerns that we're talking about in terms of sanctity of human life and the sanctity of the natural human family and the preservation of the natural human family, shouldn't they be asked right now to retract those endorsements, considering that Romney's the front runner?
Absolutely. That'd be the best time. But, you know, it goes beyond Romney. For example, Mitch Daniels announced last week he's not going to run for president. But in that month or so when he was being trumpeted by the media and by establishment Republicans as, you know, he's the guy who's going to come in and be able to beat Obama. There were bloggers, pro-family bloggers and such, who were saying, here's the social conservative case for Mitch Daniels. He signed the bill to defund Planned Parenthood in Indiana, for example. But when he first became governor, as a candidate, before even that, when he was running as a candidate for governor, he actually adopted a policy for his own campaign in which he said he would not fail to hire campaign staff based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. And if your listeners aren't aware of what gender identity is talking about, Barney Frank explained it pretty well. It was so radical a concept that Barney Frank, the openly homosexual Democrat from Massachusetts, initially refused to put it in his federal gay rights legislation. Because Barney said, I've talked to transgender activists, and what they want and what we would be forced to defend is for people with penises being allowed to shower with other women. And he was talking about workplace situations such as communal showers. Now, normal folks, Greg, refer to people with penises as men. Barney, of course, hadn't got quite a grasp on reality here. He's not willing to say they're men because he said people with penises being allowed to shower with other women. But in case anybody didn't know, that's what that issue is all about. Mitch Daniels actually made that a matter of his campaign organization's philosophy. When he became governor of Indiana, he actually, by executive order, made policy officially in Indiana what Barney Frank still hadn't been able to get done nationally. Mitch Daniels actually in Indiana made it a matter of formal policy that the state in its hiring would not discriminate on the basis of homosexual behavior or cross-dressing, this, you know, sexual identity dysfunction and confusion, psychosexual confusion, men who claim to believe they're women, want to wear a dress to work, use the women's restroom and shower, et cetera, et cetera. There was even a report from the homosexual activist group in Indiana that Daniels' campaign had made a contribution to one of the transgender activist groups. It was in their newsletter that the campaign sent a representative to attend the meeting of the group, and they actually came and made a contribution. Now, the interesting thing about this is the American Family Association affiliate in Indiana, headed by Micah Clark, when Daniels was promoting this transgender and homosexual non-discrimination policy that he eventually put into effect by executive order, Micah Clark, AFA Indiana, was being publicly critical of him. The Focus on the Family affiliate in Indiana continued to praise Daniels, to defend him, and then invited him to be the keynote speaker at their annual banquet. We talked in last week's program about how Focus on the Family, a year ago when Obama had the opportunity to nominate his first nominee to the United States Supreme Court, Focus on the Family, two different staffers, so it wasn't just one person going astray on his own, two different staffers, which leads you to believe they must have discussed this, thought about it, talked about it, two staffers said that sexual orientation should be no concern whatsoever of Christian American voters, shouldn't concern us whatsoever if Obama were to nominate an openly homosexual nominee to the United States Supreme Court, one of the highest offices in the land. It's so shocking, so bizarre. I got to read the exact quote. our concern at the Supreme Court is judicial philosophy. Sexual orientation only becomes an issue if it affects their judging. Sexual orientation should never come up. It's not even pertinent to the equation. The issue is not their sexual orientation. It's whether they are a good judge or not. Quote, unquote, Bruce Hausknecht, focus on the family. Their staffer on judicial affairs. Greg, there's no question. We used to think in this country that character and some degree of morality were qualifying aspects and characteristics of a person as to whether or not they should be put in one of the highest offices in the land, especially in a position, the Supreme Court, where they get to rule on whether or not prenatal children can be killed in the womb, when they get to rule on whether or not someday they'll illegitimately legalize homosexual marriage in all 50 states. Personal morality and character, this country used to believe that was something we wanted in people in the highest offices in the land. And yet here you have focus on the family, not the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, not the Human Rights Campaign, but focus on the family, saying that an openly homosexual Supreme Court nominee should be of no concern to Christian Americans who want a moral government and a Supreme Court that is likely to recognize our religious free speech rights. I mean, this is just astounding. And there were very few people, Pete LaBarber with Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, myself, who publicly called Focus on the Family to task and truthfully said that it represented moral surrender on that issue. And what happened in Indiana was another example. In West Virginia, most recently, there are two different marriage protection amendments before the West Virginia legislature. The AFA affiliate is supporting the marriage protection amendment that's comprehensive, that protects the institution of marriage, not just the legal use of the word marriage, while leaving the door open to having homosexual marriage, as long as you call it by a different word, civil unions. The Focus on the Family affiliate in West Virginia is endorsing the other marriage amendment, which is different expressly because it will allow the legalization of homosexual civil unions if the legislature were to choose to do so. So this is an ongoing problem we face in the pro-family movement across the country. Distressingly, I think it is because some of the pro-family groups want to be accepted by the public, want to be embraced by the public, that they have been molded and influenced by the public more, by the culture, more than they are being faithful to their mission to try and impact and shape the culture. It's been the reverse.
For Christ, correct?
For Christ, for biblical principles.
Is it fair to say, Gary, that some of these organizations like Family Research Council, Tony Perkins, James Dobson, who ran, and now Jim Daly, who runs A Focus on the Family, is it fair to say that their actions have demonstrated that they do not have a biblical worldview?
Well, I read last time an excerpt from Time magazine. You know, the answer to your question is that it's disturbing to even ask the question, isn't it? I mean, of organizations that many of us grew up looking to as the flagship for the things that we believe in, regardless of what the answer to the question is, the issue is what is communicated to the public. Here's what Time magazine said about the question, and it doesn't even matter if it's true or not, but here you have the mainstream media telling Americans that this is the case. They say that how these pro-family groups acted regarding the 2008 presidential election, quote, exposed a much less lofty agenda, that they just liked their seat at the table, didn't want to lose, didn't seem to realize that by signing on with a front runner, they were following, not leading, demonstrating weakness, not strength. With this plot twist really exposed that the shepherds have no sheep, you get the sense that rank-and-file evangelicals are just as sick of their own leaders as they are of the political arena in general. Just one
more
example.
Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. I think the grassroots was in a position to revolt against the presumed leaders of the pro-family movement last presidential cycle, and had it not ended when it had, I think all of this would have gone entirely public at that time. But having gone through it, as shocking as it was, one meeting we discussed, Greg, was here in this one meeting of pro-family leaders from across the country, national groups, state-level groups like mine, we were actually told when discussing what candidates for president we should consider supporting that we would not be allowed to talk about their records. We would not be allowed to talk about Mitt Romney promoting abortion on demand and the homosexual agenda and making money off
the
sale
of pornography. Are we supposed to focus on what they look like?
Well, I don't know. What they wanted to do was allow for a positive presentation only. In other words, when someone would stand up and say that Mitt Romney was a champion of family values and a pro-life champion, that go unrebutted by the truth. We were being told we could not tell the truth. That was shocking. Well, the shock has worn off, and a lot of us have come out of that 2008 cycle intent that we will not stand by and allow it to happen again. Just one other example, the Family Research Council website had what was purported 4 years ago to be a candidate survey. And it said, for example, promise to veto any repeal of the ban on homosexuals in the military. If you went over, it said Mitt Romney, yes. That Mitt Romney had promised to veto any repeal of the federal law prohibiting openly homosexual individuals from serving in the United States military. Absolutely false.
Mm.
Romney never has said any such thing. If you clicked on the supposedly documenting newspaper article that was listed right there on the Family Research Council website, it took you to a news article in which Romney did not disavow his prior endorsement of gays in the military, which is what he had done, but said simply that this was not the time to change the policy since we were involved in a war. How do you get from that to telling Christians who go to the FRC website believing they can trust that what's on it is factual, that Mitt Romney has pledged to veto any attempt to repeal the federal law? Mm. He's never done any such thing.
Gary, we got about less than a minute. Sum it up. Sum it up, because we could go on forever with this, but this has been great, fantastic information. What is the solution in a nutshell?
Well, faithfulness. You know, Ezekiel 3:18 says, "Son of dust, I appoint thee a watchman. Go tell the evildoers they're doing evil. If they listen, great. If they don't, at least you've saved your soul." And millions of Americans trust us to do just that, to tell the truth and to be faithful to the agenda we say we're all about. That's what we got to do.
All right, God bless you. Gary Glenn has been my guest. God bless you all.
One of my lifelong heroes, a 20-year congressman, worked with Ronald Reagan to fight abortion at a federal level. This is Congressman Bob Dornan. Bob, welcome to Bob Inyart Live.
Reverend Bob Inyart, for the rest of my life, I'm indebted to you. I got your documentary, Focus on the Strategy, that you gave me seven simple words that I will never look at another piece of pro-life legislation without saying those words.
But what are those seven words?
Seven words, and then you can kill the baby.
It's a bad law if it says, and then you could kill the baby.
And then you can kill the baby. If you do this, that real notification, your documentary, everybody in America who wants to be part of a good fight, they must get that documentary on the strategy.
Thank you, Bob Dornan. That was Bob Dornan, U.S. Congressman, fought for life for many years. We appreciate him and are thrilled with his endorsement for our video, Focus on the Strategy.